how about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Jean-Lit Foot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Broadcasting live from Florida's capital city, this is the Jeff Cameron Show, brought to you by Orange Theory Fitness on Real Talk 93.3. Now, stop what you're doing and listen closely. It's time for the Jeff Cameron Show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Jeff Cameron Show 93.3 Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV. We're required to let you know this hour is pre-recorded. I was feeling under the weather today and fighting a little something, but we weren't going to not do a show for you. So this is pre-recorded. Chat amongst each other if you're in the Heisen Lincoln Law Firm chat. We appreciate you. Thanks for listening. If you're driving about town, as always, thanks for doing all of those things. On Twitter, it's at Jay Cameron Show. Tom joins me as always. Hey, by the way, buddy, just because I'm always interested in these things, I went and looked it up. ABC, and don't worry, guys, this is not going to dominate the talking points. ABC drew 7.66 million viewers for the Panthers win over the Oilers in Game 7 the other night in the Stanley Cup Final. That is the best hockey audience of any kind in the United States since Game 7 of the 2019 final between Blues Bruins, which drew what is still the record of 8.91 million. So this approached a nearly record audience, and I bring that up because that's Edmonton and Florida.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's good news for hockey.
Yeah, this is close your ears, earmuffs, everybody. You don't want to hear this. That's the ESPN effect. That is the ESPN effect on hockey. It was on NBC Sports and NBC. Nobody knew where to find NBC Sports. Nobody understood. You would go to a bar, and it would be one in a hockey city. And you'd be like, hey, can I get the game on NBC Sports?
Like, where is it? Yeah.
What channel is that? People would look at you. What channel? You have it on ESPN, and you cultivate an audience good enough to remind people over and over again, and this is coming up, that a one American city Game 7 in a non-traditional market can do nearly 8 million views or ratings points. That's impressive stuff. And the sport was good. The playoffs were good this year.
Oh, they were great. Yeah, they were great. Yeah. It's the sport's always good. If it gets a chance, if people see it, the sport is awesome. Hockey's the one sport. Like, I haven't been able to do it with golf. You know, I worked for the PGA Tour channel for 7 years with SiriusXM. And I knew every Wednesday when I did that show with Trey Jones, the golf coach at Florida State, who I should congratulate, just re-upped his deal. Doing good things over there at Florida State these days. And congratulations to John Pack. Got himself a win on the Corn Ferry Tour, buddy. Here we go.
Yeah,
Johnny Pack, right behind me. That's my man right there. Autograph that for me.
He's close to getting his card, man.
Come on, buddy.
Earning his way onto the tour through Corn Ferry success. Nicely done.
It's hard to do. It's hard to do, man. Golf is really hard. But the point would be that we would do those shows, and I was privy to all of the ratings for all of the golf shows and what our ratings were. And it's a niche show on a Wednesday night. I understood it wasn't moving the needle. It's a very select audience. But I would also learn about how many people were watching, you know, like how many people are going to be watching the Travelers. You know, I will. I love golf, but I'm not the target audience in the sense that you already have me. They're trying to grow the game, as they say, right? And there's just, without Tiger, There are just certain limitations that you can't get past in golf. It's just, it's impossible. Those numbers, the numbers with Tiger and without Tiger are massive, Tom, massive. If Tiger's playing in a tournament, the average Joe who doesn't care that much about golf will watch it.
Yeah.
If he's not, they will not. They do not tune in. They don't. It's crazy. So you rarely see a seismic shift in ratings for golf, for example. Hockey is the only sport I'm aware of where if I tell somebody, hey, I know you don't watch hockey. You grew up in the South and you didn't play hockey. And the greatest indicator for any sports success is, and I've brought this up before, the numbers bear this out, is whether or not people played it or watched it growing up. So if your kid plays baseball and plays a lot of it, let's say, he's going to watch baseball when he gets older. If he didn't, he will not. It is highly unlikely that he'll just randomly start tuning into baseball games if he didn't play or she didn't play softball or whatever it might be, right? It's pretty rare. Trying to win those people over is very, very difficult. And so I meet a ton of people who are like, you know, I want to like hockey. It seems like it has all the elements that I would like. It's fast. It's violent. It's skilled. The guys are tough. There's a lot of action. They're not standing around. You know, it's like there's a lot of going on. And it's hard to win them over. But if you convince somebody to watch hockey or to watch playoff hockey in particular, it's the only sport in my 27 years of doing this job that I've had people come up to me and say, you know, I heard you and Tom talking about it. I heard you and Matt talking about it. And I decided to watch it. And then now I'm hooked. I watch it. Now I love it. I've never had somebody say, oh, you know, you and Tom talk golf and I started watching it because of that. And now I'm hooked. Never. Yeah, and I've never had him say that about baseball, yeah. Really about any other sport. But hockey does. If you give hockey a chance, you'll be won over by hockey.
And again, it's a whole lot easier to find it these days. I think also Turner's done a very good job in their presentation. You know, again, that's a network. People don't flock to TNT for sports. But they do a really good job of elevating it, giving it the platform, making it feel larger than life. Whereas, you know, again, NBC, you had the same three yokels in a studio and they're annoying. And you could tell the budget was $5, you know, but now it's given its just due. And I think there's a reward for that. And also, again, in this era of the game, this is as entertaining as the game has been in the last 30, 40 years because scoring is up. I know the correctly, you predicted, and as it's a game seven, it's a cup game.
Yeah,
you know the under's going to hit in that particular moment, but there are more goals being scored now than there have been when I grew up. When it was 2-1, trap, boring hockey. Like essentially, it would be akin to football being the old NFC South games, 10-7, 9-6. Like that's the hockey I grew up watching. I still love the game.
Yeah,
now it's a much better product to watch. And the great thing about the hockey season is in about 2.5 months, it begins again. So it'll be right around the corner.
I always joke about it. I mean, that's, by the way, it's the longest it's ever gone into June.
Yeah.
Across North America, the 7-game series averaged 8.8 million viewers. So that's all of North America. Tom, that is up.
Yeah.
85%. Mm-hmm. 85%. This is why you want to be on ESPN.
that is correct. When you're a sport that's fighting for casual viewership, this is what elevates you. And that's where, you know, again, last year's ratings won't be the same because Turner had it. And it's just, it doesn't carry the same weight. You can't put it on ABC the way that ESPN can. And last thing I'll say about this, it's in the weeds, but for us in the offseason, as we're trying to bridge from one place to football, right?
Yeah.
There's been a long discussion about the NHL wanting to start the season earlier and end it earlier. I don't think they're going to now, because now that the Stanley Cup final went longer than the NBA finals,
yeah,
the finals, they're seeing viewership went up. They were competing with the NBA and finishing before the NBA my entire life. I think they just tapped into a new resource where if they go deeper into June, there's less competition. There's eyeballs or they're looking for something to watch and they're going to watch your sport.
The last time hockey was this popular, they shot themselves in the foot and went on strike.
Yeah.
And that was back in 94, right? The Rangers winning the cup. in the Messier team. I mean, that hockey had ascended past the NBA in some markets, and it looked like it was on the verge of being the third most popular sport in America, behind baseball and football. Now it's not even close to that. You know, the NFL is king now. College football is number two. And then you get into the NBA and baseball and then hockey.
The last thing about TV strategies in general, I always thought the NHL was dumb for doing the Winter Classic on New Year's Day against college bowl games. Specifically, the Rose Bowl always gets exceptional ratings, even though they're pretentious and ridiculous. It always gets massive ratings. You're setting yourself up to lose when you put that game on New Year's Day. I always thought they should go on Christmas and play on Christmas against the NBA.
It'd be awesome.
But now that doesn't happen anymore because the NFL is like, F you, NBA. The NFL always plays on Christmas now, and they're doing it again this year. So I don't know where the hell you place it, but they didn't understand that if there's less competition, you're going to get more eyeballs. Maybe this now opens their eyes to that we should just go later than the NBA finals.
We get into these conversations every day about where college football is headed. What is that going to look like? What's Florida State's place in all of this? Obviously, that intrigues all of us. But I'm going to be very fascinated to see how college football does as they emulate the NFL. And that is what college football is becoming. We are going to have an AFC and an NFC, in essence, Big Ten and the SEC, right? And how do you handle going head-to-head with a league that's more established and does it better? This is going to be a problem.
Part of it is you play on a different part of the calendar. Now, December is about to be insane. They have changed the calendar in general. So signing day this year, for example, is going to occur the week of conference championship games. They want to separate signing day from the portal. So what we were experiencing the last couple of years was BS. I mean,
yes, it was not
in our industry. Like, I don't care. The coaches get paid millions of dollars to go through this nonsense. We are trying to figure out what the heck. You got transfer visitors the same time you're trying to close down early signing days.
Yeah.
So signing day is now going to be the Wednesday before conference championship games. So you're going to finish the Florida game and we're going to go right into signing day. That is now the new reality of December. Then you're going to have your conference championship games. The portal window opens, and then the opening weekend for this year's calendar of the college football playoff is December 20th and 21st. So if you caught all that, you're going your week 12 rivalry weekend.
Yep.
4 days later, early signing period opens, conference championship. Then you got Army Navy with the portal window at the same time. Then you've got round one of the playoffs, December 20th and 21st, and then round two of the playoffs on New Year's Day. December is absurd. They've at least ordered it a little bit differently. But if you thought you get a break as a college football fan, you know, around the holidays, it's just not the way anymore. It's loaded up in that month.
We're already having it be part of the, you know, day-to-day jargon talking about the college football playoff. Again, we're in for an entirely different way of viewing college football this year. And I think until we start to get into it, we haven't really wrapped our head around it yet. You're going to view week-to-week college football in a way that you've never viewed it before. I mean, the way you perceive the importance of any one game is going to change. The way you perceive the necessity to win certain types of games. You've always wanted to win them all, and you've always known it's important. But the way you perceive certain games and certain matchups at certain times of the year during the season are going to be entirely altered by a 12-team playoff and an automatic bye for conference champions. And by the way, the SEC only gets one automatic bye because conference champions get the automatic bye. You can only have one.
Right.
So they only get one, even though this thing will probably be flooded with SEC and Big Ten teams. Only one of them's getting a bye.
Right. And this is something that the powers in the playoff era, of which we are not one, we never were, because even in 14, we were not respected for going undefeated. So this is something that the powers, like Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia, to a degree Clemson, they had that we didn't, which is, if I'm undefeated 11-0 and I'm playing Georgia Tech in week 12, it's not ideal to lose that game. But if I did, it's no big deal. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
Or if I'm 12-0 Georgia and I'm playing in the SEC championship game, if I lose, generally speaking, and last year was an exception, generally speaking, it's no big deal. It's no big deal. I get a freebie. I get a free pass. And the idea of the free pass is going to be present for those teams, more teams than ever before. Because so what, you know, you're going to be playing for a bye week instead of playing for your playoff life. Oh, I'm in the playoff.
Yeah. You play for a bye week. Yeah.
Would have been nice to have that bye, you know, versus, oh my God, we're going to get left out. It's just, yes, there's a different level. Now, if you've got to the right of the dash, one loss or two in November, then you're going to feel like we always have, but you need to lose a game or two before you feel that desperation anymore.
I think we're going to realize in a way that's different than the NFL, which is odd, but I think we're going to realize how huge that bye is. I know we've had wild card teams in the NFL multiple times win the Super Bowl, and there's kind of almost something to be said for the team that just keeps playing.
Yeah.
That comes up a lot. It comes up in baseball, too. We've seen what happens in baseball. That downtime is not good for teams. It seems like you don't want any part of that time off.
Yes.
But in college football, I think you're going to want that time.
If you are, as we're constructed right now, you absolutely want that time. But let's say there will be a wild card team that wins it all. It'll be Georgia, and they're starting then their Heisman Trophy quarterback got hurt for 4 weeks, and
it would have been last year's Georgia team, by the way.
Dear God, yes.
It would have been last year's Georgia team would have won the national championship if they had made the playoff. And if it were a 12-team playoff and they had put that Georgia team in, they would have won the national championship. They would have beat every one of those teams, and they probably would have beat most of them by like a drum.
It would have been us in Georgia, buddy, because we would have figured it out on offense after a few playoff games. And that defense would have, hey, man, we'd get to that championship game giving up 20 total points. Yeah, buddy.
We might have. We would not have beaten that Georgia team. we would have been in the game, Tom, but we would not have beaten that Georgia team. We wouldn't have lost 63-3, but we would not have beaten that team. Man, I'm still mad at that team. They got to be mad at themselves. It's ridiculous. They would have won the national championship.
That is going to be what happens is you have a team who loses their star quarterback. They've got three losses, and you're sweating on Selection Sunday. Don't let them in. Don't let them in. Don't let them in.
Yeah.
And there's Clemson at 11-1, and they're like, no. I think we're going to put in Georgia 9-3 over this 11-1 because it's about the better teams.
If somebody got in with three losses over a one-loss team and their schedules were I'm telling you, though, I know we are setting up to be hypocrites because I'm going to champion three-loss SEC teams when we're in the SEC. I'm just going to do it. I know I am. I'm going to be that guy because here's the deal. If we play a schedule that features Georgia, Alabama, a one-off against Ohio State between the Super 2, and then we have Florida and Miami, and we play Clemson, and we play I'm assuming they go along for the ride.
Yeah.
And then we're playing Tennessee and Auburn and LSU. F all you guys. We're going to the playoff with three losses. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, maybe. Or just maybe it was a hype machine all along and Tennessee was fraudulent and we never should have lost to them in the first place or Auburn sucks. I mean, hell. Auburn is some sort of feather in the crown of Alabama last year?
No, not last year. I'm not that Auburn team was terrible, and that's an embarrassing win for Alabama, if you want to call it that, just like the USF game. I'm with you. Last year was a fraud. But when we go to the SEC, I'm telling you right now, I do think, honestly, we're going to have to get used to the idea that you are going to feel, and I think to some degree, rightfully so, pretty entitled at 10-2 over a non-Power 5 undefeated. Period. You just are.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not wrong. I'm sorry, you're not wrong.
Yeah, we already did feel that way with the Boise States and TCUs of the world back in the day. I mean, so there is precedent to that, and we were in the ACC at the time. But, like, oh, God, Boise plays Virginia Tech in week one. Congratulations on winning by 7 over Kellen Moore. Woo, what a great game.
Right.
And It was an awfully played game. You could tell the Hokies suck, but Brent Musburger's like, see,
this and prattling on, prattling on.
We've already lived there. We've already lived in that reality.
Yeah. I just want people to be ready to call it out on yourself, everybody. I'm pre-calling it out on me. I'm doing it right now. I'm telling you, I'm that guy. We're going to be like, well, you know, Selection Sunday, we're going to be sitting around. I'm going to be like, I think you can make a strong argument that our 8-4 season is just better. it's just better than BYU's 11-1. It is, guys. It is.
Well, what you can say, well, the games don't matter. Losses don't matter. Losses don't. Clearly, we've got a through line here.
You incorporate the injustice to your argument, Tom.
That's correct.
You take control. You take it back. You take the power back.
It's called rhetorical judo. Rhetorical judo. Beautiful.
It's Jeff Cameron Show, 93.3 Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV.
Hey, Seminoles, we all know how important it is to score in the red zone, but are you prepared for success in the retirement red zone? 5 years leading up to your retirement date and the immediate 5 years after are a critical time of thoughtful planning for you and your family. And our friend and fellow Knoll, Adam Tolliver, and his team at Artisan Financial Strategies are prepared to coach you to victory. Some of us, well, we're at midfield and want to plan ahead. Others are ready to punch it in on the goal line. Whether making sure you know how much you can spend without running out of money, protecting yourself and your family against rising healthcare costs, or carefully planning your legacy, the Artisan team brings a combined 30-plus years of planning experience and world-class resources to help you navigate the way. For more information, just head over to KnollRetirement.com. Now, that's one word. KnollRetirement.com.
The Jeff Cameron Show is a production of the WarChant.com Multimedia Network. Check out WarChant.com today for the latest news inside Florida State Athletics. That's WarChant.com. Now, back to Jeff on Real Talk 93.3.
You guys thought I forgot. I did not forget. Look at that guy. That's Matt Millar. He forgot.
I thought you were going to forget.
Buddy, I'm not going to forget. We forgot one time in like 20-something years.
Yeah, and immediately 20,000-something people alerted me to it and asked, what the hell, man? So I got in trouble the 1 year you forgot.
But, well, you know, it's not like you remembered. You could have texted me.
No. Absolutely not.
It is the NBA draft name game that we do. This all started because Millar said something racist on the air.
not wrong.
It is a unfair descriptor, but I thought I'd use it. Matt had a tendency back in the day when he was producer extraordinaire for me, where he'd go, no. That was his voice for anybody. It wasn't even just Asians. It was like anybody.
German, Japanese, they all say, no.
And I was like, I would say to you, is this German from Asia originally? And you'd go, no. And I would be like, why is that your foreign voice? His go-to foreign voice was just no. Like it was a samurai of some kind giving, telling a child to stop doing something.
No. Oh, well, he spent time in Sudan, I can tell.
And that somehow on the Jeff Cameron Show turned into, all right, I'm going to ask you where people are from because the NBA draft is coming up and a lot more foreigners are being drafted. And we were watching the draft back in those days and we were like, who the hell is that guy? Who's the Tingus Pingus? Who's this guy? And we would be laughing about all these people. And then I just started to ask Matt Millar, and now it's become a time-honored tradition on the Jeff Cameron Show, and we weren't gonna not do it today. So are you ready?
I am ready. I just, for everybody's knowledge, I do not look any of these up. I have no idea, and that's most of the fun of this. So I'm ready to rock. No cheating involved.
All right, so now these are a list of candidates to be drafted in the two rounds of the NBA draft, which gets underway tonight. And most of these are scouted foreign players, of which we've never seen. And Matt Millar has got to guess their origins, guess where they are from. Not where they played college or where they went to get noticed, where they're from. And so I give the name. And world traveler Matt Millar says, oh, I know that. And then he gives us the answer. Now, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, was last year your best year ever? Tom Lang is in the background. He can correct me if we're wrong. Tom, was last year his best year ever? Didn't you get like three right finally?
I believe so. I believe so. I'll let Tom confirm that, but I believe you're right.
Yeah, I believe his Googling skills were excellent last year, Jeff.
Oh, man.
All right. I see. We got some implied cheating. Okay.
So Millar's hands are visible, which is good.
I got glasses on. You can see.
Yeah, you can see the reflection if he's cheating. So he wants to end the nonsense. Also, that Devil Rays shirt is beautiful. All right.
And when you take two or three from the Pirates, you wave the flag, you know.
You guys should have seen our texts. They were hilarious. I knew you'd laugh when I sent you the Brad Pitt. I need
really good. He was really good.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Tom, music, please.
You can't copyright that. Come get us, bots.
I'm gonna let it play for a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. Here we go. First one up. 19 years old, 6'9". A rising small forward. Zachary. You don't get many Zacharys. Zachary Risacher. Zachary Risacher.
I'm going to go just based on themes that I've learned over the years. There's always a number from this country. He's from France, Jeff.
Holy moly, we're one for one. One for one out the gates.
Let's go. And Richard Simmons. Oh, this is a good day. This is a good day. I don't know. That's never happened.
You've never started one for one that I'm aware of. I would have had to say like Jerry Smith, and you would have been like, America, Jeff. Yes.
Yes. All right. We're one for one. Off we go.
All right. Well done.
Okay. Well done. Hey, my logic worked. You know, themes. There's always one from France, and there's usually multiples.
So. All right, this is putting you to the test. This one here is going to put you to the test. There's no fallback knowledge on this one.
Ooh, okay.
A 7'1" center. 7'1", he's 200 pounds. How skinny is this guy? Good God, Millar. Alex Saar. Alex Saar.
I'm only going to lean into, I don't know why I'm leaning into Alex being German, but I'm going to say he's from Germany.
No. He is not German. He is Australian. You eat your Domino's pizza and silence yourself after that miss.
Australian. I didn't even. All right. Basketball. He's basketball.
Told you. Yeah. You whiffed. Here we go. All right. Another toughie. 6'10" power forward. Tijan Salu. Tijan Salu.
I need that first name one more time, please.
Tijan Salu.
I got to go back to the well. I asked for the first name. We're going back to France. He's French.
Holy moly, it's France.
What?
You did it again. Unbelievable.
Gosh. We got two. Oh, feeling good. Feeling good. Well, hell, last year I think was the best year because there was only like seven total players.
Well, there's not that many this year either. But
I'm killing it already.
But you're killing it. You're 2 of 3. Are you just going to say France when you don't know?
Yes. Well, mostly, yes. That's one of the themes while not studying and not cheating for this. I was like, you know, I was thinking France shows up all the time. There are a few other countries I'm not going to ruin yet because they might show up. So that's how I prepared. I think I've got it this year. I'm killing it.
It's smart.
So proud.
Well, it's well done. It's well done. Okay. This may be a first. I gotta tell you, this is interesting. 6'7", 203-pound, Nikola Topic. Nikola Topic.
I just mentioned there's usually some other countries, and this is one of them. Jeff, is he Serbian?
This is getting ridiculous. You're 3 of 4.
I'm going to flip my desk.
This, it's no longer fun. Matt Millar is dominating.
Oh.
That is unreal. Unreal.
Yay for me. This is, okay, fun. Logic is working. Can you believe this? Wow. Okay.
Topek was identified at a fairly young age, being named captain of the Serbian under-16 national team when they won the FIBA European Challenger Cup. You remember that one.
Yeah.
His breakout came in 2023. He had a dominant showing in the EuroLeague where he won the under-18 MVP in the championship game. He is a Serbian all-star.
I had the over in that game. So, yeah, it was good. No, he's absolutely, Jeff. I'm stunned. I got nothing. I got no dukes. I got nothing.
6'10" power forward. Bobby Kitman.
Bobby Kitman. Bobby is
6'10".
He's 6'10". What's he play again?
Power forward. He's a forward.
Bobby's Swedish, Jeff.
He's Australian, Matt.
Oh, I almost said that. I was like, there could be two of them.
The Australians are coming strong these days, right? Buddy. They're doing some things with the players. Bobby, when you hear his name, you'll know he's Australian.
And all right. I'm pissed off about the Alex one now, because don't we have an Alex punter kicker guy from Australia?
Mastromano, yes.
Yeah. I should have put that together, man. I did the Iceland one year, but geez.
It's not quite stereotyping, but I like what you did there. Yeah.
The
only Alex I know is from Australia. I should have just gone Australian.
Yeah.
Okay, here you go. This is going to be interesting here. A 6'9" small forward, skinny kid. Pacome Datiot.
Hello, dog.
Don't look at, don't you cheat.
No. I'm looking down. I'm sorry. I'm going to be straight with you. I'm going to pick an African country, Jeff.
Okay.
I just don't know which one yet. Dialect. We're going to go, he's from Sudan.
I was about to insult you and ask you if you could name an African country. No, he's from Germany.
What?
Pacome Datiot is from Germany.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Need a lot of work. Need to get a lot better.
You know, I will tell you that I suspect, and I will look this up later, a lot of these guys were born in one country, then moved to the other and grew up in that new country and played their basketball in that new country and then are listed from that country, but that's not where they're from. There's an outside chance that you're right, that this guy, Pacome Datiot, is from Africa. There's a chance.
It doesn't sound German to me. That's, or wherever the hell he was from, I forget.
He dominated in Treviso, Italy, when he was seen in a showcase. So I don't know, but that's what they got.
So you know his NBA talent then.
You ready?
You know. Yeah, let's go. I'm ready.
Last two. Nikola Jerzerzik. Nikola Jerzerzik.
Nikola is from somewhere in Finland.
Yeah, I thought the room. It's Serbia.
He's Serbian.
Oh! You outthought the room.
I did it to myself.
Man. He's Serbian. Yeah. Last one.
All right, let's get
it. Lock it in, Millar.
Yeah, I got to get this one.
This is a point guard.
Oh, okay.
So sometimes that gives you clues. He's a point guard. Ratio Farm Oom. His name is Ratio Farm Oom.
Well, did he dominate in the G League game or anything like that?
Hold on, let me double check. He's long. Oh no, I got this wrong. I screwed up the whole thing. That's not right. I did it wrong. This guy's name's not Ratio Farm Om. That's the team he played for.
Oh.
Okay, I'm glad you asked a question. I gotta go back. Here's his real name.
That's a significant turn of events.
Hey, by the way, not only is his name not Ratio Farm Om, his name is Juan. Juan Nunez. Juan Nunez. He is not Ratio Far. He's Juan.
I'm gonna go not Japanese.
That's correct, but we need an actual city or country, please.
I mean, Mexico or Spain? I'm going to go Portugal. We'll go Portugal. We'll go somewhere in the middle.
Spain. We were so close. I still think you got, what'd you get, three?
I got three.
It's not bad, buddy.
Man.
Three's good, and you've got these fallback answers now where you know France and Serbia are omnipresent.
Always on the board.
Always on the board. Yeah. Yeah, Juan Nunez tripped you up, probably because I distracted you by calling Juan Ratio Farm.
Boom. I was going to some Asian country that I was going to be called a racist for saying, Ooms aren't from there. Ooms are obviously from there.
I would have gone, no.
No.
Gone, no, as soon as you did it. Bye, Matt Millar. Love you.
All right, brother. Love you.
That's it. That's a sweet Devil Rays jersey. He did well. He did well. And Tom, you did well. You did very well with do 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 do. Jeff Cameron Show will come back, wrap it up. Peace.
The Jeff Cameron Show is a production of the WarChant.com Multimedia Network. Check out WarChant.com today for the latest news inside Florida State Athletics. That's WarChant.com. Now, back to Jeff on Real Talk 93.3.
Our thanks to our mutual dear friend, Matt Millar. Beard looks good on him, man. That beard looks good on him. He's got to keep that year round. He's got to keep it to incorporate the fact that he's losing all of his hair up top. It's finally happening.
That's a good run. I mean,
yeah,
that's
a good run.
He's 8 years older, so he's mid-40s.
He's damn near 50.
That's where you check in, and if you're in the golf league and you're done, you come into the clubhouse and you say the number, and everybody's like, nice, good job, and you could feel a sense of pride. You know, you're not getting laughed at.
Well, if you shoot in the 80s and you're 40-something years old?
Well, yeah, I'm just yes, that's with the hair, you know? It's like, that's the effort. You know, the hair, that's a good effort. Yeah, There's nothing to be ashamed of there, man. That's a good number. Yeah.
It's good effort. I don't know how I got through this whole ridiculous show today without mentioning the fact that it sounds like, Tom, you'll have to tell me, but it sounds like we were surprised by the fact that wide receiver C.J. Wiley said yes to Florida State yesterday.
Very much so. Nobody had it anywhere. Everybody thought it was Georgia. Florida State did get the last visit but he kept it close to the vest. You know, the consensus is that Georgia is very angry about this and will push for him to the bitter end. But this is a tremendous get for Florida State in that he's not just a really good receiver in this class. He's thought of in the state of Georgia to be one of the better wide receivers to come out in the last cycle or two. And he's about 6'4" in height as well. So this is a kid that a type of talent that is very tough to pluck. And he was an LSU legacy as well. So, you know, a couple of hurdles that Florida State had to clear, in-state Georgia and a legacy, and they did it, which was stunning. Yeah.
His finalists were obviously Florida State, and as Tom just mentioned, Georgia and LSU. He verbaled to Florida State yesterday. For those of you that don't know, C.J. Wiley is his name, 6'3", 210 pounds. That's a big kid. I mean, there aren't many high schoolers with still another year to play high school football that are already over 200 pounds. I know that now just because I watch my own son play wide receiver, and you go to these high school games and you're reminded that a lot of these high school kids haven't even come close to putting on their man weight yet. And they're all 160, 170 pounds. You know, when you go out there, I forgot how little we all were playing high school football. And then so you see a kid 210 and he's a junior. That's okay.
Again, we'll see. Like everybody else, I agree. You're not, you know, telling me something that I'm going to fight you on. You got to get to December and get the signature on the piece of paper. I fully understand that. But you can look around the way this thing was covered yesterday by national outlets, local outlets.
Done. Yeah.
Only Georgia outlets were covering his signing ceremony because they fully expected to hear the Bulldogs were the pick. He says Florida State, the room remained silent because they expected it was going to be a looky-loo. And it wasn't. And the coach had to say, I think it was the coach, had to say, that's it, everybody. And then they started clapping for him because it was stunned, a stunned room. So that was a big time surprise.
Yeah. He's from Milton, Georgia. And that is, again, I think when you talk about overcoming teams like LSU and Georgia, LSU in particular here, because of the legacy aspect. Like, so I get that you shock people by grabbing a kid out of the state of Georgia, given how good Georgia is and how much they wanted him. That's a fair thing to talk about. It's even more impressive to me that you beat out LSU, given that it's a legacy. Is yeah. You know, and he's a guy. LSU is not a, you know, obviously a sorry program. It's a really elite program, and Brian Kelly's a really elite recruiter, a good recruiter.
Yeah.
So you really you outshone two of the very big wigs in the SEC to do it. That's okay. All right, Mike, let's go.
Well, this is where you double down in a moment like this for the battle's end, not just because they provided us an interview today, but because you're going to need it. I don't foresee this one being over and a lot of kids like this being over. And that could be frustrating if you don't land the signature at the very end. But again, Georgia had outdueled, according to the experts, the legacy part of the LSU pitch and the Brian Kelly factor with what they just sent to the NFL in Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas and what he's done in his career. Georgia had outdueled it to the point where if you look at the on-three RPMs, you can roll your eyes, but it was over 80% to Georgia. You don't see a kid surprise the prediction machine because these predictions are informed. So yeah. There's misdirection involved here. And apparently, I don't know this for certain, our coaching staff didn't even know. Like he kept it close. He kept
well,
it close.
Okay, so a couple things stand out to me there. I love that for a lot of reasons. Clearly, you have a kid who can make up his own mind, a kid who's going to decide for himself what he wants, because there's no way you can tell me that there weren't powerful forces, including family, telling him to either go to LSU or Georgia, right? I mean, that's obvious. You're from Georgia. Your dad played at LSU. There's no chance you weren't being pulled in those two directions greatly. But clearly this kid, upon leaving FSU, had a lot of thinking to do and really loved his time at FSU as a visit. And then just thought, you know, I know what I'm supposed to do, but I'm feeling FSU here. I'm feeling FSU, whatever that vibe was. That's huge. Now we'll see. Again, there's a lot of time to work on this kid if you're Georgia or LSU. We know how this works. I understand it. I agree with you. I'm not going to count this as a signee right off the top. Like no right. chance he goes. We've all learned our lesson here. But it is great momentum for Florida State. It's great PR for Florida State, and you can utilize it.
Well, and yes, and they are. They are. Coach Dugans retweeted our War Chant tweet that talked about how much of a shocker it was. I think, you know, he leans into it, and he should, because it's a moment to flex and remind the other kids that you're in on that maybe have Florida State third on their list that, hey, why do you think he said yes to us? Why don't you talk to us and expand that conversation? And again, just to give you a window, it doesn't always work like this in the prediction industry of recruiting.
Right.
Something I will never do, by the way. But on Sunday, Kevin.
Sometimes I do it. I had Noddy to the Knowles. I really made my chops back in those days. People realized I became a recruiting expert.
Well, yeah.
I've had a few.
What I'm saying is, like, I did it for a different company I worked for 15 years ago before signing day. But you're not going to a website to log an RPM pick, is what I'm saying.
Right.
So Kevin Wynn on Sunday, the defensive tackle who committed to this, said on camera outside of Collegetown on Sunday morning, I just committed. And everybody was, what? But he wanted his moment. And so everybody kind of agreed to, all right, you know, let's just let him have his day, which was the next day. It was on Monday that he committed. But he let everybody know. Then you're seeing RPMs and crystal balls come out. Well, I think they've got a good chance.
Yeah.
Ingenuousness. This is not a prediction.
That's like your boy with the made putts for all those years. We're like, I don't know, Johnny. He might make this one. But you're like, dude, he made it 5 minutes ago. Stop doing that.
It's got a lot of Gary Koch energy. A ton of Gary Koch energy, because it's like, well, we don't want to step on the kid's moment. Yes, you do. RPM pick. It's called a crystal ball. Get out of here with this nonsense. That's of course you want to step on the kid's moment without officially stepping on the kid's moment. It gets you clicks.
It's my favorite moment. Gary Koch, 25 footer, Johnny. I know it could be a tough right to left here, but I just got a feeling. Oh, I'm sure you do, Gary. Yeah. I'm sure you do, because you just saw him make it 5 minutes ago. Damn it.
Everybody's missed this one to the right today. You know.
Oh. Now there you go. It's to the right again.
I'm all day, guys.
Just none of them see it. None of them see it. But me, I see it. I see it amazingly so. Good work, Tom. Good job, Matt Millar. Thanks, Justin Cryer. Thanks, Battles In. Thanks, everybody. Peace.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Jean-Lefoot Foot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries.
Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.